The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, I'm back in studio. Thank you very much for the 1 week hiatus as I enjoyed myself in Florida. I attended Disney World for our beloved staff member Angela Chambers, who turned 50 this year, and she is a Disney freak. So we went to Disney World. Good contingents from Conference Financial was down there, did a VIP tour on her behalf for celebrating not just the 50th anniversary of her turning 50, but also of Disney World turning 50. So we had a good time. And then down to Fort Lauderdale for a conference, and then my wife and I hung out there another day and a half after the conference was over. So that's why you were able to hear Doug Hughes last week in the studio. So that's a little synopsis of what the last week and a half has been. Next week we will have, I've been twisting his arm, but it's more of a timing thing. Jim Inman Jr. will be with me next week as we do the gift-giving show, kind of a tradition here on Your Money with David Hayes, as we prepare people for that Christmas season. What kind of gifts can you give folks that have sort of a financial thread through it for all different ages and lifestyles? So I'm told Jim, I said, Jim, let's do the show. And he said, that would be fun. We'll figure it out. And I'm like, okay, you come up with the content. So we'll see what Jimmy comes up with for next week. So we'll record that on Wednesday to play on Thanksgiving Day, assuming no NFL football knocks us off the air. But if that happens, we'll be live, or not live, but we'll be recording. The recording will run on Saturday morning at 9 o'clock. And if you miss it there, always at WGCLradio.com and on the podcast, which I didn't know, but it's all over the place. Spotify, Google Play, Apple, all that. It's everywhere. So you have no reason not to listen. Let's do a little news of the week, or tidbits of the week, brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions. They are the full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Always some great deals around Christmas time with their auction at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And Lance Like of the Like Law Group, give yourself and your family the peace of mind. Make this a 2022 agenda item for you. Get proper estate planning. Call Lance at the Like Law Group, 812-323-8300. And finally, do you want a generator? Do you want some solar rays? Give Unrivaled Electric a call. They're your full-service electrical contractor. They're veteran-owned. They want to be your electrician like they are mine. Call them at 812-361-3604, or do what now three people have done. Call my office and ask me for that electrician's name. Oh, man, that's awesome. All right, let's talk about this. The first calendar year of the 8 years that Barack Obama was president, the S&P produced a 26.5% gain. When Donald Trump was in office, the first year, 21.8% gain. And the first calendar year so far with Joe Biden, 26.2% with 7 weeks to go in the year. That's hard to believe. Every U.S. president since 1993, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump, and Biden began the first year with the wind at their back, where they had control, total control of Congress. I found it interesting that 1 year later, 1 year from now, midterm elections will be held on November 8th of 2022. All 435 House seats and 34 of 100 Senate seats will be contested. The president's party has lost the House seats in 18 of the last 20 midterm elections. The president's party has lost Senate seats in 14 of the last 20 midterms. We were just talking about that this morning, how history does tend to repeat itself. Oh, I just lost my news of the week. No, here we go. I'm back to it. Inflation, obviously up big time, 6.22 on a year-over-year basis. That's the largest since November of 1990. And the key is here, folks, if it levels off and kind of trucks along at a normal 2.5-3% from here, it'll make up some ground for no inflation practically for the last 20 years. Savings for retirement, the 401k pre-tax contribution limit will be $20,500 in 2022. Of course, if you're over 50, like yours truly, you get to throw more money in the hopper because they feel sorry for you. Really, I never knew why I had to wait till 50 to throw extra money in for a catch-up provision, but that's the way it goes. 68% of American workers in the private sector work for employers that provide retirement benefits as of the end of March of 2021, and only 51% of the 68% who had access to a plan actually elected to participate in the plan. I'm telling you right now, auto enroll, auto escalate. I've been preaching this, for years, and finally, we're starting to see even smaller employers jump on the bandwagon. I found this pretty interesting. Of the 50 largest American cities, Fort Worth, Texas experienced the largest percentage growth rate, 24%, while Detroit suffered the largest percentage, down 10%. Just four of the top 50 cities lost population in the last decade. But just four states, this is the interesting part, just four states have economies worth at least $1 trillion. That includes, of course, Texas and Florida. These top four states represent 37% of our national economy. It comes from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics and Economic Analysis. All right, what else do I have here? The savings rate, big, which soared during the pandemic, has now fallen back. The savings rate was 7.5% in November of 2019. We didn't have anything else to do. Then it rose. So it rose to 33.8% in April. Can you imagine? 33.8% of your money was being saved. Now it's come back down to that pre-pandemic low of 7.5%, which is still historically pretty high. And why is that the case? Well, it's the baby boomers, right? When they get older, they start to get their kids kicked out of the house. They're paying down their debts. They're saving like wild people. We predicted this literally 20 years ago in this program. Now, yes, I've been sitting here for 20 years, that demographic trends are very predictive of what's to come, and savings rates was one of them. In fact, not babies anymore. I'll wrap up with this. Baby boomers, they are the 78 million Americans born between 1946, the year my father was born, and 1964. The last of the boomers will turn 65 years old in 2029. By 2030, an estimated 9.5% of the U.S. labor force will be individuals at least age 65 or older, up 6.6 from today. Yeah, people are getting pulled back into the workforce. A good Wall Street Journal article talked about that. Maybe that could relieve some of the labor shortages. And down at Disney World, it's so much fun to jump on one of those boats, and you see this kind of cool dude or gal driving. And like, hey, you know, tell me your story. Oh, I retired from XYZ company, or I was in the military, and now I'm just down here and didn't want to stay at home, so I thought I'd come and drive a boat and get to see little kids have fun. Anticipation, squalling and bawling on the way home, passing out on the buses of exhaustion. Yes, that is Disney World. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about diversification, because you might think you're diversified by owning the S&P 500. That's over 500 companies, right? Well, that's true, but think again. When we come back, we're going to talk about how the S&P works and how lopsided it is when it comes to the weighting of different companies. We'll be right. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Yes, it's your money, not my money, not Rod's money. It is your money. And that's why you listen to this show, because next to family, as we get ready to celebrate Thanksgiving next week, money is the most emotional thing we deal with. Rod, before you came on, I said, do you think you are diversified in the S&P 500, over 500 largest companies in America? You should be. Then I told everyone to think again, kind of how the S&P works. Here's how it works. Half of the S&P is literally controlled by six companies. There are another 496 companies, I believe. I think there's 502 companies in the S&P 500. They represent the other half. I was looking at a well-known car company that many of you drive. Yes, there's only about three or four around town. And if they fell completely off the face of the earth, literally went bankrupt tomorrow and left the S&P 500, it would only have about a 2.6% effect on the overall value of the S&P. So, Rod, Yes, this is the big companies a lot of people know. What's happening this year is certainly giving us some indication of how this S&P sort of all unfolds, because when you look at the top six companies this year, you gave me these numbers as of a few days ago. One of those companies was up 50% on the year, two of them up 25% on the year, one up 8, one up 12, and one is negative 1, or if you average them all out, about 20% return for the big six this year. And the S&P is actually up about 25 or 26% year to date. So, Rod, let's talk about how people may be lured into the idea that they are diversified when, in fact, half of their portfolio is literally made up of six companies if they're in the S&P 500.
Yeah, and we've definitely seen that in a bigger fashion in the last couple of years, you know, coming out of the pandemic and even right before the pandemic hit in the good years you had. The performance was heavily driven by those top six, maybe even spread into the top 10 companies that were doing it. Now, for longevity, you want to see a broad-based rally. You want to see it filtering into not only multiple companies, but multiple sectors. But as you and I talked, at the same time, it's hard to fathom that the market is going to go in one direction and those six companies are going to go in the other. But I think to the point you're trying to make, it's not so much the performance or the return you're going to get by owning that basket of stocks. It's knowing and understand what you own, and are you getting out of it what you think you are supposed to be getting out of it. So if you bought a basket or an ETF of the S&P 500 expecting to have broad diversification, well, you have broad ownership of different stocks, but I don't know that your performance is broadly diversified because it is cap-weighted, meaning those largest stocks take up a bigger percent of the overall portfolio. Now, if you want to be truly diversified and you want to own the S&P 500, that's the basket you want your diversification in. There are ETFs out there that will own that basket in what they call an equal weight form. So all of the stocks have an equal proportion within that index, and you're going to get what that index does without being driven solely by those big boys. But once again, some of those people like the idea of the overall performance of that basket being driven by the big boys. The key is know what you own and know why you own it.
If you look at a graph, and I would encourage anyone who has any time on their hands to just pull up the pie chart of the S&P 500, it is mind-blowing. We can sit here and tell you that half of it is driven by these six companies, but when you see it in a graphical sense, a pie chart, I mean, it is eye-popping to see those six and then the other 400 and some just scattered around and how little they make up of that index. So as Rod pointed out, as goes the index, as goes those six companies. Now, this year, because of the fact that they are up about 20% as a basket, it's not heavily driven the value as these cyclicals have started to come around and make their way as the reopening happened. But here's the thing, folks. If interest rates go up, which they probably will, then what happens with these valuations is they're going to come down. One of the main reasons, and we've been telling you this for years, the reason stock values have been driven up from an interest rate perspective, I'm not going to talk about earnings and all the other stuff and all that, but when interest rates are low, it kind of gives you the permission to pay more for these companies. And as interest rates go up, there may be some pressure, assuming nothing else happens, on some of these big companies. So just be aware, and like Rod said, know what you own. And Rod, speaking of that, on the area of inflation, again, people are worried about it every day. People come in the office, first thing, what about inflation? I've said it in the show, and you can say it as well. The way to combat inflation is to own things that go up with inflation. What is that? Stocks, real estate, you know, things that go appreciate over time with inflation. So even though, yes, interest rates may go up, you're going to have all kinds of other factors that go into valuations of companies, and certainly expectations of inflation is a big one.
Oh, yeah, most certainly is, and especially because that inflation can eventually change the spending habits of the consumer. And when you're a consumption-driven economy, when that begins to happen, obviously it affects the outcome and the numbers derived within that economy. So, yeah, inflation is very important. Glass and I have joked about this a few times on his show that, of course, the government number likes to strip out food and energy, but those are the two components that nobody can avoid using on a regular basis. And typically those are the two components that have the greatest impact on buying behavior and potentially it changing. So I think near term for the holiday season, I don't think inflation is going to have a big impact or draw down on a good holiday shopping season. But if we don't begin to see some of these numbers lessen as we get into next year, then there is a concern that eventually the consumer starts saying, you know what, this was supposed to be temporary and it's still here and it doesn't seem to be going away. They may begin to eventually start making those changes. That's what we've been looking for, is changes within the economic data that is telling us that the consumer is no longer feeling as confident with spending his money as what he has been. Up to this point, we haven't seen a weakening, but we also haven't seen inflation let up yet either.
What are you doing for Thanksgiving, Hot Rod, next week?
Sticking around here, so it's going to be a very low-key, immediate family. Haven't ironed out any details with my mom and dad, but that will probably be the most extent of it outside of my wife and our two kids.
Sounds like a nice, quiet holiday to me. Rod, I'll talk to you later. I'll see you back at the ranch.
Sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, are you worried about the elimination of the stepped-up cost basis? Well, what is that? What does it mean for you? I've got a pretty cool strategy I'll share. When we come back, it's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, Rod does such a great job. Last week when Doug filled in for me, he said, I'm going to have Rod call in and talk about this. Rod's always a great filler. So if you need 10 or 15 minutes of you ask him a question, you want to shut up time, and you just want to sit back and drink your coffee, get Hot Rod on the show. But no, he does a great job. He and I have been together partners in our practice for, 26 years, I think. So it's been a good ride, and hopefully, it's like I told someone the other day, I feel like it's just the beginning, which is a good attitude to have. All right, here's my question. Are you worried about the elimination of stepped-up cost basis? What is it? What does it mean for you? Now, when I talk about everything being on the table, everything's on the table. We talk about your IRAs and 401ks are one of the areas that you have the most control over on when you pay the tax and how you can move it from taxable to tax-free. But what if I've owned some stock for a long time? Maybe it was through grants from my company, or maybe I just got sort of fortunate and had something forever and it's worth a lot of money, but I didn't pay much for it. I had a situation in yesterday that we removed stock from their 401k in what's called net unrealized appreciation, a great strategy. Haven't talked about it much in a while. But you remove the stock from the plan. In this case, their cost basis was $45,000. We pay the tax on $45,000. We then put it into a regular account. It was worth $286,000. So now if we sell that stock, it's treated as capital gains, not as ordinary income. Had we left it in the 401k and rolled it into an IRA as we pulled money out, it's all considered ordinary income. That's called net unrealized appreciation, and that's a winner. But what if a person's like, hey, I really don't want to pay the tax at all? Well, just own it till you drop, till you're dead, and that's what stepped-up cost basis is. When you inherit a piece of property, a stock, whatever it might be that is not inside of an IRA, you receive what's called a stepped-up cost basis under current law. Okay, so in that case, I have it. I paid $45,000. It's worth $286,000, and I die. It goes to my son. My son inherits $286,000. He can sell it for $286,000 and pay zero tax at all. This works with real estate. It works with stocks. It works with just about any appreciated asset. Okay. Now, there's worry that that's going to go away, especially for larger numbers, like $5 million potentially. So here is the strategy. Now, sometimes I say things and you're going to have to sit back and think, okay, is this really right? Should I really do this? Well, once again, there's about a minute and a 7-second disclosure at the beginning of the show that pretty much tells you that you should be checking this stuff out on your own. But this is the area of, you know, fruitful ideas here on the show. So here's the thing. I have a client that literally has, $7 million. This is no kidding, of an individual stock. The cost basis on it is something around $400,000. I mean, this thing's been around for 30-plus years. So what do you do about that? Well, you either just keep hanging on to it, which, by the way, is about 80% of his holdings, of his entire holdings, or do you start to sell it? Well, if you sell it, you're going to pay capital gains. In his case, he would pay more Medicare premiums. In his case, he would now get into the net investment income area of taxation, which pays for the Affordable Health Care Act. So all kinds of unintended consequences. Or if you're comfortable with only 80% of your net worth in one company, and at this point I think he somewhat is, you can say, okay, I am 75. My mom is 95. And I'm going to transfer this stock to my mother. I'm going to give it to her. I'm giving all $7 million away to her. I will then file a gift tax return that says I gave away all this money. Under the current tax law, each of us have over $11 million of lifetime gift and estate tax exclusion amount. If you're married, that's over $22 million. At the end of 2025, the final drive, it does revert back to where it was, which is about $5.5 million, give or take a few hundred thousand dollars. But it's been pretty well documented that if you do something during this time, there's not going to be a clawback of that particular provision in the tax law. I have a lifetime gift amount of $11 million, so I give away seven of it. Now, what happens now? I just sit back and I wait. My mother's had a great life. She's 95, but we all know that eventually we all die, and mom lives, let's say, another year or two. You have to live at least 1 year. She dies, and I receive all the stock back at, guess what? A stepped-up cost basis. So that $6 million plus of gain that I had just got completely wiped away by me giving it to my mom passing away, and it coming right back to me. What a cool strategy is that? Whether it's $7 million or a few hundred thousand dollars, the strategy can work for you. They have to live a year, and you must file a gift tax return. A gift tax return is information only. Mom doesn't pay tax. You don't pay tax. It's information to say, hey, by the way, I gave more than I'm supposed to in any 1 year away, so it's going to hit my lifetime exemption amount, and that's the way it works. Pretty cool, eh? All right. Once again, listen to the disclosure at the beginning of the show, and then you can know what to do with that information from there. All right, I think that's enough for now. Let's get talking about what's going on in the overall economy when we come back. Let me check my time here real quick. No, I'm not going to do that yet. I'm going to go into something else. I need to quit using this person as an example, but it's hard not to. He's single, and single people get absolutely hammered when it comes to taxes. So we had sort of an aha, eye-opening moment together this week, and I want to share it with you. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. If you're listening online, yes, you can rewind and listen to the last segment because that was one of the coolest ideas I brought to you in a long time. And where did that come from? Well, it first started in my noggin, and then it made its way to the Ed Slott Study Group. And then a follow-up meeting that we had via Zoom yesterday with some of the old charter members all around the country. We were talking about, hey, bring your best idea to the table tomorrow. And that was mine. So I thought I'd share it with you guys. All right. So let's talk about this situation that came up this week. I'm sitting with a client about 3 years ago. He's 69 years old. 3 years ago, we were anticipating required minimum distribution starting at 70 and a half. Well, lo and behold, the law changed and it booted him out to sit 72. Next year, he will be 72. So we're going to have to face RMDs. He is sold on the idea of higher taxes down the road. He's sold on the idea of doing Roth conversions. What he doesn't like is paying this exorbitant amount of Medicare premiums. Remember, when you're single, everything gets cut in half as far as deductions go and limits go. At the same time, your taxes literally double, which if you don't understand what I'm talking about, all your deductions get cut in half practically because you're single, and all your tax brackets get squashed in half. So as a married person, the first 19,000 or almost 20,000, I think it is around 20,000, of taxable income, that's after my standard deductions and my exemptions, is subject to a 10% tax. Well, when you're single, it's half that. Your deduction's half, and your bracket gets cut in half. So here we're sitting looking at his situation. We're like, well, we know we have about 4 years left, maybe five years, counting this year, of the current tax law staying in place, we hope. So what are we going to do for the next 5 years to just rip the Band-Aid off? And is it worth it? What do I mean by that? Let's move more. If we're already at the maximum Medicare age and we can go all the way up to $500,000 of income and still be at the same Medicare bracket, Medicare premium, which is ridiculously expensive. We're talking $523 a month he pays for Part B. Should we just go ahead and just do it? So we did a pretty cool analysis. We're not quite finished with it because you have to take into consideration a lot of other things, like not just the income taxes, right, that you pay on it, but you do have to figure out the Medicare side of it as well. And then you also think, okay, what about the opportunity cost on the money that I went ahead and paid the tax on, or the other things that could happen, like the net investment surtax charge and all of that. So it's kind of a complicated calculation, but we're just about finished with it. And it sure looks like he should be pulling the Band-Aid off and just saying, okay, I already have, you know, all this income coming in. Now I'm going to be forced next year, forced to take another $100,000 of required minimum distribution. That's what his RMD was going to be. Well, that hosed him. That put him into that highest bracket for sure. So let's just go ahead and convert another $300,000 a year. We're going to do that for the next 5 years, including this year. So that's 3, 6, 9, 12, yes, 15, $1.5 million to a Roth, and we are done. Then at that point, guess what? A year after that, his Medicare premiums settle right back into where most of you pay, about $146 a month. His tax bracket will be reasonable, hopefully, assuming that they don't jack with him too much. And he can live off into the sunset in a very happy and what I'm going to call debt-free life, because when it comes to taxes, that is a debt that we owe, and we're going to get rid of it. So it may make sense in some cases just to rip the Band-Aid off, close your eyes, grit your teeth, make it happen, because 3, 4, 5 years from now, you'll be like, you know what? I'm glad I did. And like I say in many of my publications and commercials and different things like that, that, listen, yes, he's single, but he has kids. And what better legacy to leave to your children, a big old bunch of tax-free money or a big old pile of money that's never been taxed, and that they have to take it out under the current rule within 10 years, and Lord knows what the tax rates will be, and it adds to their income. And in his case, he's pretty proud of his kids. He should be. They're all doing really, really well and making good incomes. And if you have all this extra money left to you and you add that to your income, then they have a whole bunch of problems themselves. So leaving it tax-free is always, 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 always better than taxable, especially at these known rates. Last thing I'll leave you with, we didn't want to convert all of his IRA. Why? Because we want to do our charitable giving from our IRA. That is the best thing going, folks. You put the money away tax-deferred, meaning you didn't pay the tax. It grew tax-deferred, and it goes out tax-free. That's like an HSA on steroids. It's your charitable giving account. Like I said in my book, 2025, The Final Drive, my rule of thumb is take your annual giving that you know you're going to give to your church, charities, or whatever, divide it by 0.05 or 5%, and that's a good number to just say, I'm just going to leave that in my IRA. That's going to be my charitable giving fund. It satisfies your RMD, because not until you reach 80 plus will your required distribution be over 5%. And, and it's tax-free. And then make sure you know that you did it, or you tell your tax person that you did it, because there's no code on the 1099 that said, oh, by the way, Joe gave $5,000 to his church. You have to say to your tax person, oh, by the way, that $5,000 that came out of the IRA, that went to my church. That's called a qualified charitable distribution. Hope you learned something in the last two segments. I'm going to take a quick break. When I come back, the Fed has formally announced or signaled the beginning of its bond purchasing program to come to an end. What does that mean for the markets? What does that mean for mortgages? I'm going to come back and talk to you about that and more. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, another idea that came up in my group setting, which I thought was pretty interesting, these guys are pretty high income earners, right? So they're not right now, they're not putting a ton of money away tax deferred, but in some of their cases, it makes sense to do that. And even David McKnight on the program has said, listen, our strategies and things we talk about are for what I'm going to call ordinary people. There are extraordinary cases that our strategies and ideas don't apply, but for the mass majority of people, they do. He lives in Jersey. Of course, the tax rate's pretty high there. And he's like, man, I'm putting money away in my solo 401k, maxing this thing out, taking the tax, you know, deduction now in a high tax state. And oh, by the way, when I retire, I'm moving to Florida, and I'm going to pull it out all tax-free because Florida does not have a state tax. Neither does Texas, and neither does a handful of other states around the Great Union. So another strategy, if you want to avoid paying state income taxes, and that ranges from like here with your local, it's around 5, state and local. Kansas City, my buddy there, he was at 7% there. They were at around 9% in Jersey on the state tax. So in his case, it probably makes some sense to put it away tax deferred because he will be in a lower tax. He will have less income in retirement. There's no question about it. So he's younger too, a little younger, and he's like, I'm gonna retire and outweigh the current administrations that will have to be forced to raise taxes. And I start laughing, and that actually is a strategy for a lot of people. Just wait it out. Maybe it'll come back around your way. But what another great idea. Put it away tax deferred, move to a low tax, no tax state, and save another, 5 to 9, 14% in some areas of California of money coming out of those retirement accounts. All right, so the Fed formally announced or signaled the beginning of the end of its bond purchasing program, designed to keep interest rates very, very low and to maintain a massive amount of liquidity in the market. Now, what does that mean? Well, they've been buying about $120 billion with a B, billion of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities. They are planning to reduce it to $105 billion. Oh no, that's terrible. And possibly trying to wrap it all up by the end of the year 2022 and potentially starting to look at rate hikes beyond that. So what does that mean? When you're the number one purchaser of treasuries, which the U.S. government is, the Fed is the number one buyer of treasury debt, where is the demand going to come from? Well, it's going to come, but it's going to come in the form of higher interest rates. We're already starting to see it tick up around, on the longer end of the curve. And when mortgage backs, when they start reducing them at a significant rate, and I'm not buying every mortgage bond out there, when you go get a mortgage, even if it's still serviced by the local bank or something, generally the mortgage itself is sold off, right? You have a 3%, 4% mortgage. It gets bundled in with a bunch of other mortgages. That's called a mortgage-backed security. Investors, and you probably are one. If you're retired or not, maybe you're investing in a mortgage-backed security. So each month you receive some principal and interest just like a mortgage. And that's your investment, so you're on both sides of it. Well, the Fed has been the number one buyer of mortgage-backed securities. So why do you think interest rates have been around 2.5%, 3% on mortgages? That's why, because they have bought so many of this debt, they're keeping rates low. What has that done? It fueled a massive increase in real estate values. Who in the world could have imagined two young people in their mid-30s in Bloomington with a couple kids at home, They have decent jobs, buying a $660,000 three-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bath home on a postage stamp lot? Well, it's because when they went into the bank, they said, oh, you only need about 5% down, 3% down, 2%, whatever. And, oh, by the way, we'll loan up to 40% of your monthly income. And they say, so you can afford this $3,000 a month payment. That includes your taxes and your insurance. And they go, yes, this we can go buy our dream home. Well, you're 35, 36 with two kids. It's not probably your dream home, but it is a fantastic home for someone in their 30s. And that's what's kept value so high. So when interest rates start to pedal up, guess what happens to prices of real estate? It heads down. It's just a numbers game. No different than trying to value a piece of commercial real estate. You look at the rents. You look at interest rates. So you look at cost of borrow, all of this stuff. And you back into and say, okay, this is what it's worth. This is how they value real estate for assessing for real estate taxes. That's why a big empty building is not assessed the same as a full building. It just doesn't work that way. I've actually been on that end of the deal where I've had a friend who bought a building that had been previously occupied, and the tax, real estate taxes here in Bloomington were around $12,000 a year. So this thing was empty, and it's going to be empty for probably at least 2 years as they renovate it. Then they'll release it. Well, when they released it, they were getting about half the income they were getting that it was getting prior to him buying the building. So guess what? Is it worth half? Well, maybe not half, but certainly a heck of a lot less than that. So I worked with him, went to meet with the assessor, and gave him the math. And they're like, you know what? You're right. We can't argue with you on this one. But then be careful, folks, because when you sell something to someone, that gets recorded. And guess what? Your taxes will be higher than the taxes that were reported to you as the buyer. So just a lot of little gotchas out there that you have to keep your eyes open for. And that's why you need people to do this kind of stuff every day, to keep their eye on the ball. If you missed an earlier segment, you've got to go back and listen to it. And I can't even describe this, but it was, you know, I've known that the six biggest companies in America drive 50% of the value of the S&P 500. I knew that. But when you look at it in a graph, a pie chart, I really literally want you to go home or jump on your iPad or whatever and just type in S&P 500 pie chart or something like that. That's how I did it. And it popped up, and I'm like, wow, look at that. So as those six companies go, so goes your portfolio. Every mutual fund owns them, right? Everybody's trying to beat the S&P. But when I tell people, listen, you're banking all of this on the S&P 500, well, six companies is really driving the majority of your returns. Are you okay with that? Then I guess you're okay with it. But in my world of diversifying, I was told as a young guy in the business that you shouldn't really own more than about 5% of any one company in your overall portfolio. Many mandates and mutual funds say that. No more than 5% of any one company. That's why you'll see at the smallest size holdings, maybe 20 companies inside of a mutual fund. That's the smallest. Most of the time they own, you know, hundreds and hundreds of companies. That's why, because they say it's too much risk. We've all been around long enough to remember the big companies that went down, right? You know the Tycos of the world. I mean, we know they're all out there. We've all, Lehman Brothers, right? There's companies that have gone completely bankrupt, belly up, whatever. And I'm not saying that any of these companies are on the verge of that. I don't believe they are unless they've been massively cooking the books, which companies have done in the past and have caused a lot of issues. You just need to know that if you're invested in the S&P 500, that half of your portfolio is literally six companies. And if you're okay with it, you're okay with it. That's all I'm going to say about that. All right, let's take another quick break. I say quick every time. I don't know how long the breaks are. They're about 2 minutes, I think, on average, with two or three commercials. And maybe you'll even hear a commercial from me. I haven't changed it forever, but I don't think I need to because the narrative is still the same, right? All right, we'll take a break. I'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Man, are you like me where you just pinch yourself and think, I cannot believe it's Thanksgiving in the year 2021. I remember back in 2020, so optimistic, so happy. I was turning 50 years old, not disappointed in that at all. Kind of excited with my new age bracket. Headed to Disney World, not for my birthday, but for a friend's daughter who was competing in a cheer competition. So we're like, sure, we'll go along. So we went along. We had a great time. Come back home around 1st of March. We planned to head out to Aruba for our spring break, which was probably going to be one of our last because my son had graduated high school in 19, and this was his freshman year in college. And then everything came crashing down and stopped and halted, and anyway, that's the way it went. Well, as slow as 2020 was, it kind of went fast in a way. And then we rolled into 2021 with all the hope and optimism of just getting back to normal. And honestly, besides a few situations in Bloomington where people still are acting a little bit, you know, weird, they're not. Everybody's open. I mean, if you want things to go back to normal, just go to Florida. I mean, I was there, and I know it's been that way pretty well through the entire pandemic. But even here, man, I was watching the Indiana basketball game. I came home from the Boys and Girls Club board meeting, and I'm watching the game. I'm like, yes, this is awesome. I mean, everyone cheering and slapping high fives, and, you know, we win by two, and it was fantastic. Going to Indiana football game, same thing. Colts game, same thing. Cram you on an elevator like the old days. You go up to your seats or whatever, and, you know, just all back to normal. So it is so great to be where we are today in 2021. But at a blink of an eye, it's going to be January of 2022. And yes, I'm no longer 50, but we'll be 52. And if the next 8 years go as fast as the last 2 years, and I'm afraid they will, that I'll be 60 before you know it. And maybe I'll still be sitting right here. So as a throwback show for next week, I hopefully have Jim Inman Jr., the prior co-host of Your Money with David Hayes, and of course the Bloomington Review, as he hosted that for several years, and a very well-known personality in Bloomington, will be joining me as my good friend to do a throwback show on what I'm going to call the gift-giving show. And that's where we come up with ideas that you can give people at Christmas that have somewhat of a financial theme in it. Could be a book or something, or a publication for someone retiring. It could be someone that's young. It could be a kid, right? Just a baby, a little booger trying to learn how to deal with money as they grow up. Things that, you know, maybe you weren't taught that you want to teach your kids, and then just all kinds of cool things. Jimmy's always great at pulling together a great list. And then I'm off to Thanksgiving with my mom at her house. We're going to do that. And then, boom, bam, before you know it, Christmas decorations are up. And it'll be here before you know it. So I hope everyone has a great weekend. I don't know what the weather's going to be like. I know Indiana plays on Saturday, so my last painful outing for the Hoosiers will be on Saturday against Minnesota. Then I said that, but then I just had a text from a buddy that said, oh, by the way, if you didn't know it, you and Misty are going to the bucket game with Betty and I on the Sunday after Thanksgiving. Okay, well, I got to get to see the Hoosiers one more time. And that would be great if we went. Purdue's been doing well. If you go up there and beat them, then maybe we have a little hope heading into next year. I sure hope so. Well, anyway, with that said, I'll talk to you all next week. And if you don't listen next week, have a happy Thanksgiving. But I will be here, I promise. Take care. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.